Chapter 21. The Shadows Lifting. Printed in the Review and Herald, August 1, 1935. Although a brief release from office cares brought relief to James White, yet it became increasingly evident that he could not longer bear the heavy burdens he had carried for nearly 6 years since he began the publishing work in Connecticut. In a statement made for the Review in February 1855, he speaks graphically of the cares and labors during the time he had been in Rochester and of the need for a respite, even if he had to leave the office entirely. Nearly 3 years since, we came to this city to establish the press with only $15. At that time, there were no friends in this vicinity able to assist us, and we were almost entirely destitute of everything to commence housekeeping. Those who then joined us in this enterprise toiled for no more than food and clothing. Their deprivations at times and their toils were not small. Prices for the Review and for tracts were fixed upon in accordance with this arrangement. The care of a large family and of the Review, instructor, and tracts has fallen principally on us. In this time we have traveled and labored in the churches about one-third of the time. This amount of care and labor, together with protracted sickness and deaths in our family, has brought us very near the grave. In this prostrated condition, we have been saddened with pecuniary embarrassment and the unreasonableness of false brethren. Our usual hours of confinement to our business in pastime have been from 14 to 18 out of the 24. This has well nigh ruined our health, and we cannot expect a tolerable state of health without a complete change in many respects. We are resolved on this change, even if we leave the office entirely. When we consented to take charge of the Review, it was with the hope that a financial committee would relieve us of much care. Since that hope perished, we have hoped that someone of the Lord's stewards would own the office and with his Lord's money manage the interests of the publishing department, but we are still left with the whole burden upon us. Without capital and without health, we cannot much longer bear the burden. He announced his intention, (1) to take all proper means for the recovery of his health, (2) to be freed from the care of the large family, and (3) to get free from debt as soon as possible and to remain free. A few weeks later, April 17, 1855, he told the readers of the Review that he had broken beneath the strain and must now leave the office to find relief from care and to mingle with friends abroad. He lamented the fact that he must be deprived of the privilege of public speaking and that his health would admit of but very little manual or mental labor. From friends whom they had met in Michigan the previous summer, Elder and Mrs. White had received a hearty invitation to visit them again. And so it came that James and Ellen White announced through the Review that they would be present at a meeting to be held at Jackson, Michigan, April 20 to 23. April 17, when the westbound express stopped at Rochester, New York, two feeble men entered as passengers. Each was followed by his wife, and each wife was carrying an infant in arms. This was a noteworthy day for me, for it was my first journey on a railway train, I being one of the babes in arms. The two family groups took adjacent seats on the same side of the car, and it was not long before they were making each other's acquaintance. The sick men sat side by side and sympathized with each other. The mothers soon found a common topic for conversation. None of them realized that a lifelong attachment was beginning. The invalids looked at each other with mutual pity. As James White saw the frail form and pale countenance of his fellow passenger, he concluded that he would not live more than a year. And in imagination, Leander Jones buried Mr. White within 6 months. The fact that Mr. and Mrs. Jones embraced the Adventist faith the following winter, and that at their home in Allegan, Michigan, they often entertained Eller and Mrs. White in later years, made the story of their first acquaintance of sufficient interest to lead Elder White to relate it somewhat in detail 12 years later. As the narrative gives a vivid picture of this journey to Michigan, we continue the story in his own words. The train sped on and we chatted sympathizingly, and Mrs. Jones and Mrs. White enjoyed a good visit. When the train reached Suspension Bridge, we all shook hands and bade each other goodbye. And now came the rush for good seats on the next train, which was to pass over the long, weary, dreary route through Canada West to Detroit. We succeeded well, and what was our astonishment to find our friends seated behind us. And now we conversed with greater interest than before. We showed them the new hymn book, by which they soon found that I was a Seventh-day Adventist minister. When we reached the station at Windsor, Canada West, we bade each other an affectionate farewell, and now the rush for the boat and omnibus and hotel. And as we passed up the stairs, we looked back and saw our friends pressing close to us. They had not noticed us till that very moment. Heavy rains had broken the Michigan Central Railroad, so that none had passed over it for 48 hours. And we were told that there were more than 1,000 persons in Detroit, bound west, who could not go on that train. It was sixth day, and we had an appointment at Jackson the seventh day, and we felt that we must go. So as soon as breakfast was over, we went to the depot. Here stood a long train of closed cars, and more than 500 waiting for seats an hour before the time. Soon a man appeared with a bunch of keys in hand, and the crowd rushed after him. We trod close to his heels and found a good seat. Our new Methodist friends were anxious to get to their home and made the same effort to reach the train. Before we left the hotel, we again said farewell with moistened eyes, expecting to meet no more on earth. But to our utter surprise, we found them again in the seat behind ours. Brother Jones, in caring for a female friend put in his charge, in looking for her trunk, lost his breakfast, so we invited him to share what remained in our traveling basket. He thanked us, and we talked of our providential meeting and of the Advent faith, but were soon broken off by the conductor's hoarse voice as he cried, "Jackson!" The goodbye was said with mutual feelings of tenderness, and away went the train, and we went to the hospitable home of Brother D. R. Palmer. And now we may turn to brighter pictures. The statements appearing from time to time in the review relative to the serious situation at the Rochester office and the threatened physical breakdown of James White had not only occasioned grave concern, but had led to prompt and sympathetic action by the friends of the cause east and west. Brethren in Vermont sent in a liberal offering, together with assurances of continued support. And from friends in Michigan came most encouraging letters, bringing assurance of financial relief and hearty cooperation. These communications made it possible for the following announcement from the pen of James White to be made through the review, dated the same day as that in which the White family boarded the westbound train. "No doubt we shall have a weekly paper. Our friends in Michigan and Vermont, who have means, will probably establish the press on a proper basis and take the care and responsibility off from us under which we have been sinking in health." The hearty reception given to the Warren Pilgrims by the believers in Michigan and the encouraging reports of progress of the message in that state were better than medicine to their burdened souls. The weekend of April 20 and 21 was spent at Jackson. Elder M. E. Cornell gave a glowing account of the success attending the laborers with the Michigan tent. He reported that the way was opening in so many directions that with only one tent, the force of ministers could not fill all the calls for meetings during the summer. He believed they should have a second tent in the field and had raised more than half the required amount for its purchase. It will be remembered that it was at Jackson 2 years previously that difficulties with two disaffected brethren had led to their withdrawal and the forming of the opposing messenger party. This opposition had become greatly weakened. It was learned that some had given up the Sabbath and that others had taken such a course as to result in a loss of confidence in their sincerity. It was now evident that the scourges of false brethren had proved to be a blessing to the brethren who maintained their loyalty. In these trials, reported James White, they learned profitable lessons. They are calculated to establish and consolidate a deep-rooted church. With great earnestness and harmony, the brethren counseled regarding broader plans for the future of the work, not only in Michigan, but throughout the whole field. From its feeble beginning, the cause had been sustained by many small donations made possible by the astounding sacrifices of those who were poor in this world's goods. Now there were believers with comparatively large possessions who were endued with the same spirit of devotion. This spirit was expressed in a letter addressed to Brother White a year previously by one of the members of the church in Jackson, in which are found the words, "I feel that all I have is on the altar, and I am willing that the sacrifice should be consumed. I am trying to be one of that number that will have my treasure laid up in heaven. I hope that those of us who have recently embraced the third angel's message will realize how much our brethren have done for us in providing means to send out messengers and publications to get the truth before us. O brethren, what we do must be done quickly. We can never gain that heavenly kingdom unless we are willing to sacrifice for the cause of God here." Brother Kellogg's love and devotion had not grown cold during the year since he had written this letter, and with him were associated others having the same zeal and earnestness. Of such brethren, James White wrote, "All they require is to be fully satisfied that the cause needs their means, and they are ready to help. They make no other calculation than to see the wide and mighty spread of Bible truth." Sabbath, April 28, James and Ellen White met with the small company of believers in Battle Creek. Contrary to their expectation to remain here but 2 days, the entire week was spent in laying plans of great import for the future of the cause. Had they known the future, more emphasis would doubtless have been placed upon the report of discussions of this week, but in the light of later developments, the following brief statement is of great interest. "The brethren in Battle Creek and vicinity are generally awake to the wants of the cause and are anxious to establish the review office in that place. They are able and willing to do so, and manifest much anxiety to relieve us of those cares and responsibilities which we have too long borne. The climate, water, prices of rent, fuel, provisions, etc., seem favorable to the location." Of the providences of God connected with the earlier developments of the work in Battle Creek that had prepared the way for this city to become the location of the headquarters of our work, we shall speak later, as well as of the councils that resulted in the removal of the entire publishing work from Rochester to Battle Creek during the current year.